What? What'd you stop it for?
I want you to take a good look at that face.
Who is it?
George Bailey.
Oh, you mean the kid that had his ear slapped back by the druggist?
That's the kid.
It's a good face. I like it. I like George Bailey. Tell me, did he ever tell anyone about the pills?
Not a soul.
Did he ever marry the girl? Did he ever go exploring?
Well, wait and see.
Big, see, I don't want one for one night. I want something for 1,001 nights. With plenty of room here for labels from Italy and Baghdad, Samarkand. Great big, sir, but...
I see, a flying carpet, huh?
Yeah.
I don't suppose you'd like this old second-hand job, would you?
Ah, you're talking. Gee whiz, I could use that as a raft in case the boat sunk. How much this cost?
No charge.
That's my trick here, George. Sound like you said no charge.
That's right.
What? What's my name doing out here?
A little present from old man Gower. Came down and picked it out himself.
He did? What do you know about that? My old boss. Isn't that nice?
What boat are you sailing on?
Well, I'm working across on a cattle boat.
A cattle boat?
Okay, I like cars.
How many of you guys here in this room have ever had a dream? Raise your hand. I mean, I want you to actually... have you ever had a dream? I think everybody raised their hand. That's good. I'm excited about that. Let me ask you another question. How many of you guys in this room have ever had a dream, you still have a dream, and it's still there, and it's never come about, and you've had it, like, forever, and you're like, now that you mention it, yes, I did have a dream. I still have a dream. How many of you guys feel that way? Raise your hand. There you go. Look at that, all of you guys. Isn't that so awesome? You know, it's a funny thing, isn't it, how this human experience works. Because from the second we come out of the womb, the second we can start actually having any kind of sense of understanding, we get this deep need in us to want to conquer the world. I mean, I have a almost 2-year-old now, and that's all he does is he spends his time trying to conquer the world. In his opinion, conquering the world is breaking it. So if he finds something and it breaks, he's conquered it. And so I chase him around to keep him from conquering the world too much so that when we're all said and done with his growth spurt, that we will still have a world to live in. But you know, as we get a little older than 2, we start getting into those early childhood years and then into the teen years and then into the young adult years, our dreams start emerging and developing a little further, and we start dreaming about big things. We start dreaming about getting out there and doing things and experiencing things. And it's no different for this man, George Bailey, in this movie. I mean, here he is, and his dream, the thing that he wanted most, the thing that he knew would finally, once and for all, fulfill his desires and needs and the things that he wants and bring life into him, was to get out of the dumpy little town in which he lived and see the world. That was what he wanted to do. It's not a huge deal. He just wanted to get out there and see the world. And so time and time again, he's dreaming about this, and here you see him in that scene where he's got the suitcase and he's ready to go. How many of you guys have ever felt like you've got a dream and you know it's going to happen, but it seems that life has a way of crowding its way in to prevent the process of that dream emerging? Anybody ever feel that way? I know George has. Take a look at this scene.
Yeah. But what happened to George?
George got 4 years older, waiting for Harry to come back and take over the building and loans.
Now, there are plenty of jobs around somebody likes to travel. Look at this here. Venezuela oil fields. Wanted, man with construction experience. Here's the Yukon. Boy, right here. Wanted, man with engineering experience. There she blows. You know what the 3 most exciting sounds in the world are?
Uh-huh. Breakfast is served, lunch is served,
no,
dinner.
No. Anchor chains, plane motors, and train whistles.
Peanut.
There's the professor now. Old Professor Phi Beta
Kappa. George Geographic Explorer Bailey.
What,
no husky dogs, no sleds? Uncle Billy, you haven't changed a bit.
Nobody ever changes here, you know that.
I'm glad to see you.
Say, where's Mother?
She's home cooking the fatted calf. Come on, let's go.
Oh, wait a minute.
George?
Uncle Billy? I want you to meet Ruth.
Hello.
How do you do? Ruth Dakin.
Ruth Dakin Bailey, if you don't mind.
That's right. Well, I wired you. I had a surprise. Here she is. Meet the wife.
What do you know?
Wife.
How do you do? Congratulations.
What am I doing? Congratulations.
Oh, come then, Harry. You
married these two. Why don't you tell somebody?
Oh, no, I can't wait
to see
everybody's
tells me anything.
You really married?
married?
Why, him.
Hey, what's a pretty girl like you doing marrying this two-headed brother of mine?
Well, I'll tell you, it's purely mercenary. My father offered him a job.
Oh, he got you and the job. Well, Harry's cop run it over.
George, about that job, Bruce spoke out of turn. I never said I'd take it. You've been holding the bag here for 4 years, and... Well, I won't let you down, George. I would like to... Wait a minute. I forgot the bags. I'll be right back.
You can see it in his face, can't you? The dilemma. It's right there, isn't it? I mean, he's been waiting 4 years. 4 years for his brother to come back because his dad died at the moment he was going to go, and he had to take over the little loan office that his dad ran in the dumpy little town in which he lived. And his brother got a scholarship, so his brother had to go off to college. So he stayed for the 4 years, the explorer, the dream, put on hold, shelved for just a little while until it can emerge. And here his brother shows up with his new wife, and you could see the dilemma in his face, half of him screaming out, I don't care. I don't care that you got some job. I don't care that you're married. It's my turn now. It's my turn. But then there's the other half, isn't there, that says, I wonder how good of a job it is. Is it a good opportunity? I mean, this is my little brother. If it's a good opportunity, if it's big, I gotta let him go. I gotta let him do this. I mean, he's married now. I'm not married. That's big. And George begins that journey, doesn't he, where he's again having to choose that moment to shelf his dream. But don't worry, even though the dream gets shelved a little longer, George is committed to that dream, committed to that thing that he knows will bring him what he wants, that he'll finally get out and spread his wings and be the man he wants to be and see the world. So he stays away from any of those things that come into life that will hold you back. And you guys know what happens when we have a big dream and we're available and free to go and do our thing. You know exactly what happens, don't you? There comes that little moment in life where you meet someone and you fall in love, and it's a disaster to your dreams, isn't it? You're like, oh no, you can feel it. It's like it's pulling you, and you're like, wait, I'm free. I have to dream. I have to go. I have to live, and I don't want to get married. I don't want to be in a dead. And as soon as you say the words, I don't want to get married, boom, there you are, getting married. But sometimes, just as you step in, you discover that you can have both. You have marriage step into your life, and what do you do when you get married? You go on a honeymoon, don't you? And what do you do on a honeymoon? You travel. And George, though stuck now in a marriage, discovers that in the midst of that marriage, he could enjoy that dream of his even more than he thought. Take a look at this scene and what happens.
Hey, look, there's somebody driving this cab.
Bert, the cop sent this over. He said to float away to Happy Land on the bubbles.
Oh, look at this old bush.
By the way, where are you two going on this here now, honeymoon?
Where are we going? Look at this. There's the kitty, Ernie. Here, come on. Count her, Mary.
Oh, I feel like a bootlegger's wife. Look.
You know what we're going to do? We're going to shoot the works. A whole week in New York, a whole week in Bermuda, the highest hotels, the oldest champagne, the richest caviar, the hottest music, and the prettiest wife.
Wow, that does it. Then what?
Then what, honey?
After that, who cares?
No, that doesn't. Come here, come here, come here.
Don't look now, but there's something funny going on over there at the bank, George. I've never really seen one, but that's got all the earmarks of being a run.
Hey, lady, you got any money in the bank? You better hurry.
George, let's not stop. Let's go.
Wait a minute there. Uh-oh.
Please, let's not stop, George.
I'll be back in a minute, Mary.
Well, hello, everybody. Miss Thompson, how are you?
Marlene, what's the matter here? Can't you get in?
Remember the first time you saw that scene, you remember it still? You didn't know the end of the movie yet? And so you watched that scene and you felt it, didn't you? You're like, stay in the car, dude. Don't get out. I mean, don't get out. Because you know it. You can feel it. You're like, oh, no, if he gets out of the car, it's over. I mean, that dream that he has to go on his honeymoon and travel the world and go to New York and all that. If he gets out of the car, it's over. I mean, just think to yourself. If that circumstance had happened one day later, just one day later, he would have been on a ship somewhere or on a plane somewhere. Off he went and doing his thing. But it had to happen then as they're driving out of town. And there's a part of you that just goes, God, come on, man. I mean, couldn't you have figured this out just a little bit on George's behalf? I mean, here's a guy. All he has is a little dream. He just wants to fulfill it. And why would you throw this circumstance at him now? Why would you do that? That doesn't make any sense. Have you ever felt that way in your own life where you're just like, God, really now? I mean, come on. What are you thinking? I mean, I'm a nice person. I like you. I love you. Actually, I love you. Just not asking for much, but these circumstances seem to jump in at all the wrong times and thwart my dreams. In this case, those famous last words, I'll be back in a minute, turn into something far more than a minute. Take a look at what happens with George and his dreams.
Now listen to me. I beg of you not to do this thing. If Potter gets a hold of this building and loan, there'll never be another decent house built in this town. He's already got charge of the bank. He's got the bus line. He's got the department stores, and now he's after us. Why? Well, it's very simple. Because we're cutting in on his business, that's why. And because he wants to keep you living in his slums and paying the kind of rent he decides. Joe, you had one of those Potter houses, didn't you? Well, have you forgotten? Have you forgotten what he charged you for that broken-down shack? Here, Ed, you know, you remember last year when things weren't going so well and you couldn't make your payments? Well, you didn't lose your house, did you? You think Potter would have let you keep it? Can't you understand what's happening here? Don't you see what's happening? Potter isn't selling, Potter's buying. And why? Because we're panicky and he's not, that's why. He's picking up some bargain. Now, we can get through this thing, all right. We've got to stick together, though. We've got to have faith in each other.
But my husband hasn't worked in over a year, and I need money.
How am I going to live until the bank opens?
I got doctor bills to pay. I need cash.
I can't keep my kids on faith. I've got to have...
How much do you need?
Hey! I got $2,000. Here's $2,000. This will tide us over to the bank reopens. All right, Tom, how much do you need?
$242.
No, Tom, just enough to tide you over until the bank reopens.
I'll take $242.
There you are.
That'll close my account.
Your account's still here. That's a loan. Okay. All right, Ed.
Well, I got $300 here, George.
All right, now, Ed, what'll it take until the bank opens? What do you need?
Well, I suppose... $20?
$20. Now you're talking. Right. Thanks, Ed. That's fine. All right. Now, Miss Thompson, how much do you want?
But it's your own money,
now,
George.
Don't mind about that. How much do you want now?
I can get along with $20, all right.
$20, fine.
And I'll sign
there
the paper.
You don't have to sign anything. I know. You pay when you can. That's okay. All right, Miss Davis?
That's right. Could I have $17.50?
Bless your heart. Of course you can have it. You got 50 cents? There we go. Seven.
We're going to make it, George.
Six.
That'll never close this up today.
Five. Four. Three. Two.
One. They made it, just in case you're wondering. And George stood in that office with $2 in his hand. $2,000 gone, $2 that he was holding on to. You know what he did? He saved a business he despised in a town he hated to help people that couldn't help him. I mean, that's basically what he did. And he did it all at the cost of his dreams again. Again. And there's that part of you that just goes, oh, man. You know, you're just frustrated for the poor guy. Doesn't he deserve to live the dream, to experience what he wants so that he can enjoy just knowing that he saw the world? Of course he does. Have you ever woken up in the life that you live, years and years of crowding in? You got that job, the wife or husband, the kids, the house, the responsibilities. The one thing you don't seem to have are the dreams anymore. And it seems like everything around you has crowded in so far that everything you used to dream about has faded away. Or if you can even see them still, they're a distant memory that you kind of get frustrated once in a while that you don't get to have anymore. If you've never woken up in that place, don't worry, you will. So just wait. Buckle your seatbelt. If you have, you will relate to this scene. Take a look.
Gormit, Excuse me.
Excuse you for what?
I burped.
All right, Tommy, you're excused. Now go on upstairs and see if little Zuzu wants anything.
Zuzu, well, what's the matter with Zuzu?
Oh, she's got a cold. She's in bed. Caught it coming home from school. They gave her a flower for a prize, and she didn't want to crush it, so she didn't button up her coat.
What is it, sore throat or what?
Just a cold. The doctor says it's not
the doctor? Was the doctor here?
Yes, I called him right away. He says it's nothing to worry
about. Is she running a temperature? What is this?
Just a teensy one. 99.6. She'll be all right.
Of course, it's this old house. I don't know why we don't all have pneumonia. The drafty old barn of a place. Might as well be living in a refrigerator. Why do we have to live here in the first place and stay around this measly, crummy old town?
George, what's wrong?
Wrong everything, George. You call this a happy family. Why do we have to have all these kids?
Dad, how do you spell frankincense?
I don't know. Why, ask your mother.
Where are you going?
Going up to see Zuzu.
You told me to write a play for tomorrow.
I would have thrown it across the room. Don't say you weren't thinking that, because I know you were. You know, you're sitting there, and you're just like, you're at the end of it all, aren't you? And everything that you know is important and means something becomes something that just means nothing. And you're just like, why do we have to have all these kids and have all the stuff and this stupid house and all that stuff? And it just starts running in your mind. And in moments like that, which come to each one of us, it's in moments like that that we need someone to step in and to bring clarity in a way that is so extraordinary, that is so beyond anything we could come up with ourselves, that it moves us back into a world, not that we used to live in, but a world that's all new to us, and we come to a clarity that allows us to live differently. And that's a big deal. I mean, that sounds easy. Just find someone who can come give you some clarity, but it doesn't happen like that. We live our lives and we go, and this is what our world turns into as we follow through. But every now and then, we are allowed a glimpse into something that shows us what we could never have seen without that moment. And in this case, the question is asked to this man, what would life look like if this life you hate so much didn't exist? What would life look like if you didn't exist? And the beginning of George's clarity emerges. Take a look at this scene.
Sure this is Bailey Park?
No, I'm not sure of anything anymore. All I know is this should be Bailey Park. But where are the houses?
We weren't here to build them. Your brother Harry Bailey broke through the ice and was drowned at the age of 9.
That's a lie. Harry Bailey went to war. He got the Congressional Medal of Honor. He saved the lives of every man on that transport.
Every man on that transport died. Harry wasn't there to save them because you weren't there to save Harry. You see, George, you really had a wonderful life. Don't you see what a mistake it would be to throw it away?
Clarence?
Yes, George?
Where's Mary?
Oh, well, I can't...
I don't know how you know these things, but tell me, where is she? If you know where she is, tell me where my wife is.
I'm not supposed to tell.
Please, Clarence, tell me where she is.
You're not going to like it, George.
Where is she?
She's an old maid. She never married.
Where is Mary? Where is she? Where is she?
She's just about to close up the library!
You know, if you've seen the movie, you know things start changing here for you, don't they? I mean, you start feeling something a little different, and you start kind of getting it. You start looking at George through his eyes, and you start going, okay, wake up now. You see, you have a wonderful life. As George discovers what he could never have seen before, as he discovers what's happening, suddenly something changes in him. And when he's given his life back that he hated so much, it's in that moment that he finally sees and understands what's really going on, that there's something much bigger going on around him than he could ever have imagined, that every moment that seemed to crowd in, every moment that seemed to rob him of his dreams were creating ripples that were creating dreams beyond his wildest imagination. And every moment that he thought was stifling was actually intentionally brought into his life to allow him to live the very things that God knew would be best for him and best for the life that he was seeking, that fulfillment and joy that he was looking for in a dream he had written for himself that never seemed to come around. Take a look at this scene, the very last scene, and enjoy as you and I watch what happens when the final clarity comes to a man and he understands what's really going on in the world. Take a look.
Well, hello, Mr. Bank Examiner. How are you?
Mr. Bailey, there's a deficit.
I know, $8,000.
George, I've got a little paper.
I'll bet it's a warrant for my arrest. Isn't it wonderful? I'm going to jail. Merry Christmas. Reporters, where's Mary? Mary, oh, look at this wonderful old drafty house. Mary! 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 Have you seen my wife?
Mary,
Mary,
there's
Daddy. Daddy.
Kids! Pete! Jenny, Tommy. Oh, let me look at you. Oh, I could eat you up. Where's your mother?
She went looking for you.
With Uncle Billy.
Daddy!
Zuzu! Zuzu, my little ginger snap. How do you feel?
Fine. Not a smidge of temperature.
Not a smidge of Hallelujah.
Hello. George. George,
Mary.
Darling. Where
Mary.
Are you? George, darling, where have you been?
Oh, George,
Mary, George, George.
Let me touch you. Are you real?
George.
Well, you have no idea what's happened to me.
You have no idea what happened. Well, come on, George, come on downstairs. Quick,
right.
They're on their way.
All right.
Come on. Come on in here now. Now you stand right over here by the tree. Right there, and don't move. Don't move.
What's happening? Wow.
Oh, I hear them coming
Daddy,
now. George, it's a miracle. It's a miracle.
What's happening?
Who's that? Come, Daddy.
Who, Daddy?
Come in, Uncle Billy. Everybody. In here.
George.
Yeah, brother, come on.
George. Did you ever see anything like that? Isn't it wonderful? So many friends. Mary did it, George. Mary did it. She told some people you were in trouble with it. They scattered all over town collecting money. Didn't ask any questions, just said George in trouble. And tell me, you never saw anything like it spread like fire.
Another run on the bank?
Here, George. Merry Christmas.
Now, don't push. There we are. The line farms on the right. The line farms on the right.
Come in, George. Merry Christmas.
I wouldn't have a roof over my head if it wasn't for you, George.
Just a minute. Quiet, everybody. Quiet.
Now get this. It's from London.
Oh.
Mr. Gower cabled you need cash. Stop. My office instructed to advance you up to $25,000. Stop.
Oh.
Hee-haw and Merry Christmas, Sam Wainwright.
Peace on earth and mercy mine.
good. The fool flew all the way up here in a blizzard.
Oh, Harry, how about your banquet in New York?
Oh, I left right in the middle of it as soon as I got Mary's telegram. Good idea, Ernie. A toast to my big brother, George, the richest man in town.
All right, stop crying now. You know what's just happened? You don't know it, but this is what's just happened. In a matter of minutes, as you watch this movie, you go from sitting in a room and thinking to yourself, stay in the car, don't get out. Your dreams are what matter. Don't do that. Don't do that, don't. To sitting here crying, going, now that's what I'm talking about. Glad you got out of that car, man. Can you imagine if you didn't get out of the car? Man, what a waste of a life he would have lived. He would have gone off and traveled, spent his money, and what would he have had? Nothing. But now he has all this. That's what happened to you and I. Just like that. Snap of a finger. Have you ever wondered why? Have you ever wondered why we sit here and we watch a scene like that and our hearts leap out of our chests and we just feel warm inside and know that that's right somehow? I mean, if we were human beings and we were designed by God to be setting us first, to survive, to make sure that we're it. If we were born out of an evolutionary process that survival of the fittest is what mattered most, then we'd watch a movie like this, and when the scene ended like that, we'd all be sitting there going, what a crock! What a crock! Who made a movie like that? Somebody should find that person and sue him. I mean, come on, seriously? Want us to buy into the fact that warm and fuzzy when he's given his dreams away. Unbelievable. We don't feel that way, do we? No, we don't. You know why? Because we are wired, but we are not wired to survive. We are not wired to look out for self. We are wired by God, designed to give ourselves away for great works that have been prepared for us. You don't believe me? You think I'm making this up? Take a look. In the Bible, directly, word for word, without excuse, this is what it says. It says in the book of Ephesians in chapter 2, verse 10, for we are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. Isn't that extraordinary? I mean, you've heard this verse before. I've said it before, but listen to it again in this new light. If you've missed everything else this morning, catch this. You and I will never find that fulfillment and life that we are looking for until we realize that it doesn't show up until you are living in your design, in your purpose. And you will never live in your design and purpose until you figure out that you were wired for good works that God prepared for you in advance. And the greatest gift that God will ever give you and I are all of those circumstances that seem to crowd in over our dreams that in fact turn out to be the very circumstances that allow us to become the men and women that we were born to be so that we can give ourselves away, so that we can find the life we think we were looking for in the dreams we started with. It's no wonder that this magical, wonderful heart of God penetrates any effort on our part to hide Christ in the middle of the spirit of Christmas. Because the spirit of Christmas, the heart of Christmas, is Christ. And it comes pouring out in every movie. Everything you watch, everything you experience, goodwill to all men, give someone the parking space instead of you. It all comes from the heart of God, where God says, I have made you to give yourself away. And forget making you to give yourself away. You know what God did on top of that? Before we were able to really give ourselves away and start thinking outwardly instead of inwardly, we need a redemptive process to take place in our hearts. Because when sin came in, sin was the thing that whispered to us and said, it's all about you. You want to know how you find life? Do what you want, when you want, and how you want, and don't care about anybody else. It was sin that did that. And then God comes into the picture and says, let me go ahead and fix that heart of yours that got so messed up with sin and got you all thinking weird. And let me show you how I designed you. You know how he did it? He did it by setting the very example for us that he's calling us to. Listen to Philippians chapter 1. Take a look at this. In Philippians, it's in chapter 2, I'm sorry. This is a picture of Christ as he came to this planet for us. Listen to these words. Verse 6, Christ, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped. but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. This is what we celebrate over Christmas. This is the heart of Christmas, that Christ made himself nothing and became man. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. Christ showed us what he designed us to be. And in showing us, he also redeemed us so that we could be who he designed us to be. If you're sitting in this room today and you are a Christ follower, let me share a little secret with you. There's a passage in Scripture in the book of Luke that says that those who try and save their lives will lose it, but those who lose their life for the sake of Christ will save it. Listen now. It sounds odd, doesn't it? Because something in us says, you got to survive. But God comes along and says to you, listen now. Whatever you try and hold on to, you will lose. Because everyone dies. And whatever you've held on to stays here for someone else. But that which you give away, you will find, will travel with you a lot longer than you could have imagined. You see, you can live your life pursuing those dreams that you think are so important. Nothing wrong with that. You can live your life collecting and holding. You can grab a hold and make sure that you get what you need before you start pouring out into others. And if you have excess, well, sure, give a little away. Be a nice person. But I promise you, what you will find at the end of that road is a place that feels nothing like dreams. But when you give yourself away at the cost of your dreams, at the cost of you and what you want and need, at the end of that road, you will find dreams so extraordinary you won't know what to do with them. And you will sit looking at a picture of your life and feel the same way you just did when you watched the picture of George's, going, I'm so glad I got out of that car. In the movie, there is a little moment, a second that takes place that you probably have never even seen before. Some of you may have, and if you have, you can raise your hand and go, I know that. I've seen that before. And you're special. You are special. So if you haven't, I want you to go and watch this movie again, and I want you to find this moment, and I want you to pause it, and I want you to see it, because if you don't pause, you won't even see it. It happens that quickly. There's a moment in the movie where George is trying to make a decision on whether he's going to give himself away or whether he's going to hold on to what he wants, and he sees a picture of his dad hanging on the wall, and underneath the picture of his dad, there is a little plaque hanging on the wall, and this is what that frame looks like. Take a look. You got 3 seconds. There it is. Told you it was in the movie. Go and find it. You know what that plaque says? I'll read it to you. It says, all you can take with you is that which you've given away. Let me let that sink in for a second. All you can take with you is that which you have given away. Folks, listen carefully. You can hold on, but you're going to lose it. Or you can give it away, and you're going to get to keep it. Because at the end of the day, the only thing we get to be part of for all of eternity are the stories we get to share in as we give ourselves away for the sake of others. It is the ripples of our life as we live as servants, giving ourselves away for the sake of Christ, fulfilling the very good works he prepared in advance for us, that we will get to experience life to the full. This is not some weird, twisted idea to get you to give yourself away. It's some weird, twisted idea to walk you right into freedom. God's heart for you is freedom, and he will walk you into it, even if he has to drag you out of the car kicking and screaming and have you go, why, God? Why now? Why here? He'll smile and go, you'll figure it out soon enough. The dreams you think are so important are so irrelevant in comparison to the dreams I have for you. May we leave these doors today as we walk into the Christmas season, as the Christmas spirit pours out on us, and may it inspire us to take God's heart hidden in the Christmas spirit and live by that heart and give ourselves away in a fresh new way. Find ways to give yourself away. Not out of your excess, but out of your need. Find ways to say, I will spend myself, because it is in that spending that life is finally found. and you will walk into your dreams like you never have before. That is the life we're called to. That is the life we're given by the redemptive process of Jesus Christ as he redeems our hearts. That is the life we ought to live. And if we do, that is the life that will bring freedom and life to us and everyone around them. Remember these words. All you can take with you is that which you have given away. Pray with me. God, thank you so much for your incredible love for us. Thank you that despite our dreams and despite all of our fussing and our screaming and our shaking our fist at you when you give us new circumstances that seem to squeeze our dreams away, thank you that you are doing all of that because you have prepared in advance for us good works that we need to live out to bring freedom and life to those around us and to ourselves, to live your purpose for us, to find that part of our wiring that says this is what it was meant to be. God, we give you permission today, at least I do in my life, to bring whatever circumstances you desire to drag me out of the car when I'm so focused on where I want to be, so that I can live my life given away to you, given away to others, and experience the dreams you have for me, not the dreams I have for myself. God, make it so in my life and in all of those lives here that desire the same. Lord God, we thank you that you have never, not once, stopped at helping us discover our dreams that you have for us. We love you, Jesus.